This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today, we're discussing how dangerous are heat waves and high wet bulb temperatures. Now, if you've been following the news, several countries have been experiencing record-breaking high temperatures this year. So if we go a little earlier in this year, Delhi in India recorded a new high of more than 49 degrees Celsius back in May. More recently, the UK went beyond 40 degrees Celsius. Portugal as well hit 47 degrees Celsius in July. And although here in Malaysia we have been spared such scorching temperatures, I don't think we should rest easy thinking that we will be spared the effects of climate change on our weather. Eventually, we do see the incidence of floods increasing as well due to climate change. And so we should look at the other extreme and look at heat waves to understand its effects on our health. And, you know, there have been scientists warning that wet bulb temperatures pose even greater danger to our health. So, you know, maybe we need to start looking beyond the numbers and the mercury to understand this health threat. And joining me to help explain the effect of high temperatures on our body and how it could be dangerous to our health is Dr. Teo Ik Poi, an emergency medicine specialist. Hi, Dr. Teo. How are you today?
Hi, Xiao Ik. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Do call us if you have any questions. The number to call is 03-7733-2900. Or if you'd like to share anything pertinent to this topic, you can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. I'm going to ask Dr. Teo to start first by explaining how our body actually works in terms of regulating our body temperature. When things are pretty normal, you know, we live, you know, the kinds of tropical weather conditions that we live in, sometimes hot, very often rainy, very, very rarely cold. How exactly do we regulate our body temperature?
So the body actually has a very unique method or way of regulating the temperature in which it's known as thermoregulatory mechanism. All right. So when we feel whatever temperature that we feel, we sense, it will be sent to your hypothalamus, which is a part of the brain, and then it will be then sent to other parts of the body to react accordingly. Okay. So the main aim of this thermoregulatory mechanism is actually to maintain the core body temperature within 36 degrees Celsius to 38 degrees Celsius, in which it is very important as our cell function are optimal at this range. All right. So what constitutes this thermoregulatory mechanism is actually sweating to lower down the body temperature. Okay. And in cold places, we usually experience shivering. That is to actually raise the body to core body temperature. And also narrowing and relaxing of the blood vessels to alter the blood flow. Okay, so these mechanisms help us to regulate our body temperature so that we don't accumulate or heat up our core body temperature.
All right. So in the example of a very cold BFM studio where I'm always suffering, you know, the body would be might start shivering if I'm feeling too cold. Of course, the moment I step out into our hot tropical weather, I might start sweating, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So that's sort of like within our typical acceptable environmental temperatures.
Yes.
What happens when it goes beyond? And we're talking heat waves today, so let's talk about as the temperature climbs. Is there even a threshold that would be considered dangerous in terms of the ambient temperature?
Okay, so in terms of that, as I said earlier on, the thermoregulatory mechanism that is inert to us regulates this temperature. So this mechanism will fail if the temperature falls below of 35 degrees Celsius or in excess of 40 degrees Celsius. So when the thermoregulatory mechanism is overwhelmed, so we might end up in heat-related illnesses.
Okay. So what exactly happens in the body when you go above 40 degrees Celsius?
So when the body, when the temperature goes above 40 degrees Celsius, okay, most of the cells will start to denature. The proteins will start to denature and it will halt functioning as per normal. So that will lead to multiple organ damages and which could then result in death related to the heat illness.
Yeah, but how rapidly does that happen?
Okay, so for a human being to survive on a temperature that is more than 40 degrees Celsius, we can only the protein and the cells will only withhold for the first 30 minutes. So we have to detect it early. We have to promptly treat the condition in which the failure in identifying the condition will result to almost 70% of death related to the health injury. But with prompt and adequate treatment, the survival rate is around 100% at the moment.
30 minutes, that's very short.
Yes.
So and we're talking about situations, it's literally life and death within that half an hour,
yes,
isn't it? Then what do we look at to identify, apart from obviously looking at the mercury and knowing, okay, it's gone above 40 degrees and I'm in danger. But, you know, in terms of what the body is experiencing, what you are experiencing as symptoms, what might occur?
Okay. So I think I go into heat waves.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, heat wave is defined as an extended period of hot weather lasting for two or more days. So, this hot weather will have significant adverse impact, especially on the society and the community, including health related death. So, some of the statistic was that was produced by the WHO between the year of 2000 to 2016. The number of people exposed to heat wave increased by around 135 million. And specifically in 2015 alone, 175 million additional people were exposed to heat waves compared to average years. Okay, and we will see this trend climbing and continue to climb over the period of in the future. Okay.
So do you consider it to be dangerous only when we're in a heat wave, that it has to be sustained for more than 2 days?
Not necessarily, but when there is heat wave, we should be more alert and be more vigilant and to identify all the symptoms and the signs that we experience during that period of time.
Even within an afternoon, if there was extreme high temperatures and if a person was exposed to it without some mitigating measures, which I'm sure we'll discuss later, you don't need to wait for a heat wave to occur then, right? Within that afternoon, within that 30 minutes.
Definitely. Mm. So it doesn't have to be a heat wave, but the symptoms might be there itself now in the outdoors, right? All right. So I go into the symptoms. So the symptoms, it ranges from a myriad of symptoms, from the minor to the major symptoms. For minor symptoms, okay, some of us might experience heat edema, in which we will notice there will be mild swelling of the feet, ankle, and hands. But this swelling rarely progresses to your shin. Okay, so this is one of the symptoms that we must look for. So the second one is prickly heat, which is your rash. This is commonly seen, rash, which is red, reddish, and of course it is itchy. So prolonged and repeated heat exposure may lead to a condition of chronic dermatitis. All right, so to avoid this, of course, we must remove ourselves from the
obviously from the conditions, right?
Itself, yeah. Yes. Mm. Wearing a clean clothes and loose fitting clothes, light colored clothes. So if this condition is not in certain conditions where it the person is exposed to the heat for a longer period of time and develop a lot of heavy sweating or profuse sweating, okay, the individual might have a depleted amount of fluid and also salt that could then results in heat cramps. Heat cramps is a painful involuntary spasmodic contraction of the skeletal muscle, usually seen over your thighs, your hands, and also your calf.
So that's because you're losing salt from the body, is that right?
Mm-hmm. So in this kind of patient, they are usually alert, and what we encourage them to take is to get isotonic drinks that has a lot of salt to replace the one that they have lost.
Drinking water alone is not enough?
Drinking water is okay, but not reverse osmosis water, because that is hypotonic solution.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm. Just normal, clean tap water.
Yes, yes.
All right. So, are those the majors? Those are the minors?
Those are the minors. So, again, I will... so the next one on the minor list is actually the heat exhaustion. Heat exhaustion. This is the symptoms that we commonly encountered, especially in emergency and trauma department, where these patients will come in to the emergency department with complaints of headache, nausea, and vomiting, feeling lightheadedness, and also malaise. All right. So when the patient comes in with heat exhaustion, usually the temperature is less than 40 degrees Celsius, the core body temperature. Okay, and it might not have any central nervous system manifestation, by means that patient is conscious and alert. All right. So in this patient, these are the patients that we commonly seen in our emergency and trauma department in Malaysia. All right. So if this heat exhaustion is not being addressed promptly, it may also then progress to the major or the severe end of this heat related illness, which is your heat stroke. Okay, so this heat stroke can further be divided actually into two, which is your classical heat stroke. Okay, in classical heat stroke, the most vulnerable group will be of the extreme of ages, which will be your children or the elderly. Okay, or people with comorbids, by means that diabetes, hypertension, renal failure or cardiac failure. So these patients are these individuals are all more susceptible to classical heat stroke. So in classical heat stroke, it occurs slowly over the period of days or hours to days, okay, and in which it gives time for the patient to actually lose their volume and electrolyte.
Mm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. So and it is commonly seen during the severe heat. Severe heat wave of more, usually more the temperature of more than 39.2 that is seen in India. Mm.
So are they not alert by the time they've reached a heat stroke?
Yes. When you reach the state of heat stroke, your consciousness will be impaired. Okay. You might be confused. You might be delirious. Some might develop seizures. Okay. And some patients also comes in with being comatose.
Oh, right. That's extreme already,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Would that mean that they had passed that sort of 30-minute window?
Yes, it might or might not, depending on how early we identify the symptoms. Okay, it is actually a bit difficult for us to identify, because sometimes we don't get the proper history of what is actually happening to the patient from the people who is around them.
Because these could be signs of other conditions as well.
Yes, definitely.
And you need to know, what are the conditions? What is the underlying cause?
Yes. Mm. So definitely the temperature, the core body temperature is very important,
right,
in heat stroke. In heat stroke, usually the temperature will be more than 40.5 degrees Celsius.
Any other symptoms that you'd like to bring up?
Okay, so that was what I explained earlier on was the classical heat stroke. The other end of heat stroke is actually exertional heat stroke. Okay, this is commonly seen, okay, especially last time we have PLKN, we have the soldiers, when they are training or when they are marching, all right? Usually we can see this exertional heat stroke in overly motivated young individuals who exert beyond their physiologic capabilities. All right. So as they overexert themselves in the tropical weather, the core body temperature will actually rise, and of course they will develop all the signs and symptoms of a heat stroke.
Okay. And that is regardless of ambient temperature then?
Yes. So regardless of ambient temperature. Yeah.
And it's because of the exertion rather than any sort of heat wave around them.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So Dr. Teo has listed out a lot of symptoms that we want to be looking out for, the effects on the body when there is extreme high temperature. And that will be, you know, around above 40 degrees Celsius in our environment. We're discussing the dangers of heat waves and high wet bulb temperatures. That's something that I would like to get Dr. Teo to explain more a little about when we come back from our break. Dr. Teo Ekpoi, emergency medicine specialist in the studio with me, and do call us if you have questions. 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my guest today, emergency medicine specialist, Dr. Teo Ekpoi. We're discussing the dangers of heat waves and high wet bulb temperatures that may be on the rise if we look at what's happening in many other countries around the world. We are not immune to heat waves as well. So although it's been rainy season this period, it's important, I think, to know the effects of high temperatures on our body, and how do we identify when we may be in danger? There's a very short window of 30 minutes, as Dr. Teo has said, for severe organ damage to set in, and you want to be seeking immediate medical medical attention when you are exposed to such high temperatures. Do call us if you have questions. 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Teo, you mentioned that people at the extreme ends of ages, like the very young and the elderly or older adults, would be more vulnerable to heat stroke, as you mentioned, and that's the more severe form of heat exhaustion, where somebody would end up being delirious, may have seizures, may be extremely confused. Can I ask about people, and you said people with comorbid conditions as well, like diabetes, kidney issues and things like that. What about people on certain medications? Are there certain medications that could sort of compound the effects of a heat, of high temperatures on the body?
Yes, definitely. When it comes to medications, there are some amount, some medications that will actually deplete the level of water in your body itself. So your reserve in the body is already low for medical reasons. Some medications were given to the patient for them to urinate more so that they don't go into symptoms of fluid overload. So those medications and some medications from the psychiatric medication, that those medications might predispose these patients towards a severe form of heat-related illness.
Mm. But knowing that, patients shouldn't be stopping those medications right?
Yep.
Yeah. What should they do?
So if you cannot avoid, if you were to have that medical condition, so the patient should be a bit more aware of their situation and probably take other general measures of probably not engaging in too much of strenuous outdoor activities, and stay most in the indoors, and use your air conditioner.
You know, I mentioned earlier, and I have been introducing the show as with, you know, talking about heat waves, but also wet bulb temperatures.
Yes.
Could you explain what exactly is the wet bulb temperature?
So wet bulb temperature, I think one is one of the most talked about issues nowadays. It is actually measured by using a thermometer in which the mercury bulb is wrapped in cloth or muslin. Alright, so it is actually a holistic method to measure the amount of water vapor that the atmosphere can hold at the current weather condition. In other words, wet bulb temperature measures the combination of heat, also the humidity, the wind, and also the radiant temperature. Alright. In contrast to the temperature that we usually get from our phone or the internet, that is actually your
nobody actually uses a thermometer anymore. I realized that.
So that might not reflect the actual situation or the actual temperature that we are experiencing at that particular area.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So wet bulb temperature is actually more accurate in terms of understanding its effects then.
Yes, definitely. All
right. So what happens and how do we use this information? Does it mean that temperature that you quoted earlier of you were saying anything above 40 degrees Celsius in our environment is considered high and potentially dangerous to the body. Yes. When you take into account wet bulb temperature, what does that mean?
All right. So in a wet bulb temperature, a lower wet bulb temperature means that the air is drier. Okay. So usually the wet bulb temperature will be lower than the ambient temperature. Okay. But if the wet bulb temperature equates to the dry bulb temperature or higher than the dry bulb temperature, that means the air surrounding or our atmosphere is, the humidity is high, and then the saturation is near 100%. Alright, so in those cases, when the wet bulb temperature equates to your dry bulb temperature or your ambient temperature, it poses a big risk, especially on our side as humans. Yeah? As we mainly cool ourselves to sweating, which is of 75% of the time. So when the body is unable to, when the sweat is unable to evaporate from our skin, so is the cooling mechanism of our body being reduced in terms of efficiency.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So everything inside the body is heating up.
Yes.
But the body cannot release that heat.
Yes, definitely.
All right. I've read it being described as, people in effect kind of cook from the inside. Yes. Is that right?
Yes, it is a way to put it. You can imagine being in a sauna. That is exactly the feeling when your wet bulb temperature is high. Okay, because in sauna, there's a lot of water vapor and the atmosphere is very humid. Okay. Even if at the temperature of 36 degrees Celsius, our sweat has nowhere else to go except dripping down to the floor. So that will not help in regulating or cooling of our body.
Mm. So then, what is the threshold for the wet bulb temperature?
Okay, a lot of literature has been has been produced, and we found out that actually the most dangerous level of wet bulb temperature is actually 36 degrees Celsius, equates to which is similar to our body temperature. Mm. So when the wet bulb temperature is equivalent to our body temperature, that means that the humidity is, we are unable to the sweat is unable to further evaporate.
Mm. Mm. Are we in greater danger in Malaysia when it comes to increasing wet bulb temperature?
Yes. About this, yes, we are very much at risk. To be affected when the high bulb temperature that we experience, especially in this country where we experience tropical weather, all right. But more emphasis and more it should concern those who actually lives near the shoreline or the coastal regions where humidity is higher.
All right. How do we as lay people sort of know when it's reached dangerous levels?
All right. So for a lay person to actually know when it reaches the danger level is, of course, we should be more alert of the news in terms of weather. We should be more, we should check more often on the ambient temperature, okay? Ambient temperature. But if you don't have the modalities to check, you can actually experience it yourself. If you feel something, if you feel your sweat has been delayed in terms of evaporation, then that itself should trigger you or give you a cue that the wet bulb temperature is high.
Mm, mm-hmm. All right. And in those instances, what could you do at that very moment, right, in terms of some sort of emergency measures? Surely going to a shaded area, just drinking a lot of water, surely that will help.
Yes. So in emergency measures, what should we do in terms of when it comes to higher temperature is that first, definitely you have to move away from the insulting cause, which is the heat or the sun, right? So next, you have to keep yourself well hydrated, okay? Well hydrated. You have to loosen your clothes, okay? Only wear necessary clothes. When you're working or when you are in games, show certain special clothing, you just remove it, okay? Make sure the area that where you are getting your rest is well ventilated, all right? And of course, avoid alcoholic beverages as that might cause dehydration, mm. and it also might impair your consciousness. Mm. So you there will be reduced in ability in judging your temperature.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What about other drinks that we're quite fond of? Coffees, teas, you know, if they're iced, will they have any beneficial effects?
But coffee and tea, usually we promote diuretic. We promote
because they are diuretics.
Diuretics. So mm-hmm. you do the volume in your body will actually depletes.
Mm-hmm. Coconut water, we do love that.
Coconut water is an excellent choice.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Now, you know, we're talking about situations where I guess we do have some amount of control that we can move away from the heat, move indoors, we can drink water and all of that. We do have a lot of people who have outdoor jobs,
yes.
Workers who work outside. A lot of the delivery riders, I see them going around in this, you know, and you use the word rightly, right? Insulting heat. What can they do? And bearing in mind, I guess, you know, they're making a living while they're doing this.
Yes. So this particular group of population is actually very at risk when it comes to heat-related illness. So what they should actually do before they start their journey or they start their work, they should actually pay more attention towards the environmental condition and get the weather forecast before they start working. All right. And they can actually pace or they can actually reschedule their working hours towards the cooler part of the day.
Mm.
And of course, get yourself well hydrated, okay? Wear light-colored clothes, okay? Light-colored clothes and loose-fitting clothes so that you can sweat easily and it is easier for the sweat to evaporate.
What are some situations that you found in your experience as a, you know, emergency physician where people have underestimated heat effects? And you know, it could be symptoms that they overlooked and all that. What are some of those situations or misconceptions that you'd like to address?
All right. So there's a few misconception of so-called myth that is going on in regards to heat-related temperature. So the first myth that usually we hear from our community in general is you cannot suffer from heat illness if you are properly hydrated. Mm-hmm. All right. So while keeping the body hydrated is actually very important during the heat wave, it doesn't exclude you from heat illness. All right. Some individual might take it too far in terms of exertional heat strokes. Okay. Assuming as long as they are well hydrated, they have nothing to be worried about. But unfortunately, heat stroke is multidimensional and it cannot be prevented simply by hydrating to a proper level. Okay, so other factors such as your acclimatization, environmental condition, the intensity of the activity that you do, okay, the duration of the activity and the type of equipment that you that are being worn during that particular time when you were in the when you are exposed to the heat, that those factors could actually mount towards the heat-related illness, not only your hydration per se. So it's actually a multi-dimensional, multifactorial issue.
Mm, mm-hmm. Okay. Any others?
Okay. So the others is heat illness will only occurs when the ambient temperature is above a specific number. So as we discussed earlier on, there is actually no specific magical number in which this heat illness will suddenly pop up. Right, so it can occurs even at the normal room temperature where the wet bulb temperature is high in terms of humidity. That itself might precipitate heat stroke, not necessarily a very high temperature. Okay, we can actually see this condition, especially during the marching of an army, a troop of army. Okay, one or two of the army might drop unconscious or might faint during that period of time, but not all of them. So again, it differs from a person to a person to another person.
Mm.
It is not there is no specific ambient temperature.
I see. All right. Okay. Are there others? We've got a question on WhatsApp that I would like to bring up. But are there other misconceptions that you'd like to raise first?
So the other misconception, and this is actually a very dangerous and misleading
myth.
All right. So the assumption, if a person is sweating, okay, they are not experiencing heat stroke. Ah. Okay. Well, traditionally, what we know, what we learned was a patient who are in heat stroke will have a very hot, red, and reddish and warm skin without sweating. But majority of the patient that we see actually does, majority of patients that we see do sweat profusely. So the absence of sweating the presence of profuse sweating doesn't exclude the possibility of the patient in heat stroke.
Basically, if you are sweating, it doesn't mean that your body is doing a good job at getting rid of the heat. You could still be experiencing heat stroke.
Yes, definitely.
Right. And I think we'll go for a quick break before we get to the listener's question so that anyone else who still has anything they'd like to ask can quickly WhatsApp in as well. The number is 018-789-8899. And you can also call us at 03-7733-2900 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I have a few of myths or beliefs of my own that I'd like to ask Dr. Teo after the break as well. I'm speaking to Dr. Teo Ekpoi, emergency medicine specialist, about the effects of heat waves, high ambient temperatures, and more importantly, high wet bulb temperatures on our bodies. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and my guest, Dr. Teo Ekpoi, emergency medicine specialist. We're discussing the effects of high ambient temperatures, heat waves, and high wet bulb temperatures on the body. It can be very dangerous. Dr. Teo has already explained at length about the kinds of symptoms we want to be looking out for, both minor symptoms as well as the major ones that indicate a heat stroke, which is really at the severe extreme end of exposure to high temperatures. I think really, really relevant here, he brought up a few myths and misconceptions that people have related to heat effects. I think the two that really are staying with me is that just because you're drinking a lot of water, it doesn't mean that you won't experience heat exhaustion and heat stroke. The other one being that just because you're sweating doesn't mean that your body won't be prone to heat stroke as well.
Yes.
And we have a listener who wants to clarify a few other beliefs or practices that we do in our community. He or she is asking, the Chinese remedy to reduce heatiness, like drinking barley water and those kinds of fluids, is this the right remedy for heat effects?
All right. For this question, as I am not a Chinese medicine physician, so I'm unable to comment on the types of drinks that you should drink. But by increasing the intake of fluid, you increase your hydration, and when you are well hydrated, you have more reserve, and when you sweat, you have a better body reserve of water, and then when you sweat, evaporate, and that hence reducing your core body temperature.
All right. Drinking any form of fluids, that will replenish your fluids.
Yes.
Like you said, not coffee and tea, because those are diuretics. They have the exact opposite
and alcohol
effect.
As well.
And alcohol as well. I wanted to ask you about some other, not traditional, just common practices in the community, I guess.
Right.
And we always wonder whether certain foods that you eat could, I guess, increase your body temperature. And, like durian is always pointed to as a source of heatiness again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any foods to eat or to avoid eating?
In terms of food, in general, when the temperature is high and it is very hot, we encourage people to actually increase your carbohydrate intake instead of your protein. Because your protein, if you take more of protein, you will have to the amount of energy that is being used by your body and produced during the degradation of the protein is high. So we encourage to take more fluid and probably increase a bit of your carbohydrate instead of your protein.
But not increase to an extreme amount either, right? So another question on WhatsApp. If the tongue is bluish in color, does it indicate a lack of oxygen or is it a sign of heat stroke?
Okay, so when the tongue is bluish in color, it means that the perfusion of the body is being impaired. Okay, either it could be in terms of your body fluid level or oxygenation. So when the patient develops a bluish this bluish discoloration of the tongue in the presence of heat stroke, it is actually a very alarming situation that we have to address promptly, either from the aspect of fluid, we have to replenish the fluid, and also we have to supplement the patient with oxygen.
I would say that if your tongue is bluish in color without you knowing what the situation might be, it definitely necessitates a visit to a doctor or the emergency room, right?
Yes.
Regardless of what the cause may be, because that's for the doctors to find out, right? Another question here. Should we let our sweat evaporate instead of wiping it off? Will it make a difference?
Okay, so when you wipe it off, your skin will be dry. So the evaporation and the heat that is being transmitted to the atmosphere is lesser. So when you let it evaporate by its own, there are more of the temperature or the energy that is from your the energy transfer from your body towards the atmosphere is more efficient.
Basically, it cools down your body more.
Yes.
If you let it evaporate, lah.
Yes.
Okay. a question here on WhatsApp again from Nurhan. Okay. Is it okay to take paracetamol? I guess treat the heat effects.
Okay. So this is one of the things that we should avoid. Panadol, okay. As we know, when we have to address the underlying cause, which is your fluid depletion and your electrolytes. Okay, when you take Panadol, it might further injure and causes harm to other organs, such as your liver.
I guess it's because people tend to get headaches. And you know, their first thing to do is reach for the paracetamol, perhaps because you think it's just something transient. I guess maybe it might be worth repeating again. What are the, you know, how do we know, you know, to look out for an alert that this is something that's not just a headache, you know, just because I'm drinking some water doesn't mean that I should rest easy. What should I take notice of and seek urgent medical attention?
Okay. So when you feel your body, when you are experiencing headache, of course, there are many other causes of headache. But in the presence of hot weather, or when you are actually working under the hot sun or in an enclosed area, so it should actually triggers you to think that, oh, okay, this headache might be because of heat exhaustion instead of a normal type of headache. So probably you want to correct it with hydration first. If it doesn't go away, then you might consider a dose of your paracetamol.
Oh, I see. So paracetamol is still okay.
If you take one dose, it should be fine.
Okay, but with hydration first.
Yes.
And then how long do we observe for before thinking, okay, this is not going away, I need to go and see a doctor?
Okay, so if you are in doubt, always seek medical attention without wasting time, because, as I said earlier on, time is of essence when it comes to heat-related injury. But you can take 5 to 10 minutes, get into a shade, okay, air-conditioned room, rest, keep yourself hydrated, and you see from there. If in the next 15 to 20 minutes you are not really improving, probably you want to seek medical attention as soon as possible.
What do you do when somebody comes to you with heat exhaustion or heat stroke? How do you treat that?
Okay. So in the emergency department, of course, we will employ many types of modalities to actually treat a patient that comes in with heat-related injuries or heat strokes. The most common that we use is actually an evaporative method, in which we wipe down the patient with cold water, and we will blast the cooling fan or evaporative fan onto them so that they can dissipate the heat faster. Other than that, we can we also place cooling pads or ice, or especially over the, your armpits and your groins, over your necks, so that you can reduce the temperature. So the target temperature that we usually go towards is actually not much. Actually, we reduce it by one degree to towards 39 degrees.
That sounds kind of lo-fi. Is it something people should do at home as well?
If you are able to do it at home, we definitely it would be very beneficial for the patient.
Okay, all right. Do you have a final takeaway that you can share with our listeners today?
So since we had been discussing on heat waves and heat related illness, I hope I am here to actually educate or raise alertness on this issue. So we hope that in the future, more and more of our public will be more alert. Okay, please do be alert of our neighbors and surrounding as well. Sometimes we have elderly at home who were not attended by any of their families. So when the heat wave strikes, please do check on them in case they need help. And if they develop the symptoms that that I had explained earlier on.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Teo Ek Poi, emergency medicine specialist, giving us a rundown of the effects of extreme high temperatures on the body, what to look out for and what you can do to mitigate. But, you know, more importantly, we're talking about a pretty small, a window of time for you to seek medical attention. So definitely be on alert for that. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.